Hello and thanks for tuning in to this episode of the ALT Learn podcast. I'm John Tate and I'll be your host as we break down the craft of teaching and the science of learning, what this pedagogy looks like in the classroom, and get to find out how our teachers are turning all this theory into practice. So, let's dive into this week's episode. Welcome to another episode of the ALT Learn podcast, where we've got a great episode lined up for you today, discussing practical techniques to support co-regulation and the development of self-regulation with our young people. So I'm pleased to say that alongside me on today's show, we have an external guest of the podcast, Andrea Edmondson. Andrea is an expert on how stress impacts well-being in both helpful and harmful ways. Andrea's knowledge of self-regulation, neurobiology, and the psychology of human behavior is what informs her approach. In addition to her master's from the Universities of London and Glasgow, she has 30 years of teaching and coaching experience in the UK and the USA. Andrea has four children aged between 12 and 20 and has first-hand experience living with and managing ASD, ADHD, PDA, anxiety, and dyslexia. So a warm welcome to the podcast, Andrea, and a big thanks for coming on to discuss it with me today.
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be here. So thank you so much for inviting me.
You're very welcome. And it sounds like you've been very, very busy over those 30 years, whether it's been at home or professionally as well.
Yeah, well, I've lived a lot of time overseas as well. So it's been giving me an opportunity to see not just how things are done in the UK, but how things are done elsewhere in the world. And I think that's probably those experiences really do inform how I see things.
Absolutely. I think it's really important, isn't it, to get that wider appreciation. And hopefully I'll be able to extract some of that wisdom over the next kind of few minutes, really, for our listeners. So let's get into it then. Thinking about the title of the podcast today, From Co-Regulation to Self-Regulation, can you briefly explain the difference between both of those terms and give any of our listeners who are maybe not entirely familiar with those terms or the differences a quick overview of what it is and why it's so important for us to know about it in education?
Yes, well, self-regulation, there's a huge number of definitions, I think 400 plus on the internet. But for me, self-regulation is how we manage our energy and recovery in response to stress. And it involves the body and it involves the mind. It's about feeling safe on the inside, feeling balanced. And that word stress that I've just used has been hijacked by many people. And it's viewed very typically as being negative and primarily emotional, but actually more of a feeling rather than a kind of body experience, but actually it's a biological process. So what stress is and what stressors are something I'll go into in a lot of detail in the training. So I don't want to go too much into it now. I'll catch on a little bit as we go through the podcast, but that's kind of self-regulation. Co-regulation, it occurs when a caregiver, so it could be a teacher, a parent, regulates or changes another person's physical or internal state using their voice, their facial expressions, their body language and gestures. And these subtle cues that we kind of give out activate another person's nervous system. And they all get signals for safety, which will help them feel calm, or they may get signals of threat, which will make them feel more stressed. So when we're looking at the relationship between self-regulation, how somebody feels on the inside, especially an adult in an education environment, if they're feeling stressed, that's going to resonate. It's going to leak out to the students, and that's going to either escalate them or it's going to have the power to calm them. So this ability to self-regulate really develops from birth to the, when the brain's fully mature around 25 years old. And in between those, all those experiences that we have, especially in those for early years, really build a window of tolerance for how our nervous system responds to the stresses that we encounter. So really key for adults to be able to self-regulate, to get themselves into that calm state so that they can co-regulate the students who are still developing their regulatory skills to be in that place of calm and alert where they can function, socialize and learn at their best.
Interesting. And it's interesting you mentioned the word stress there kind of quite a few times, so that we know as kind of people working in education that school can be a stressful place, can't it, for a number of our students with certain experiences or situations being either, you know, more or less stressful for different children. So we also know that this can be displayed in different ways. And you know, you were talking about kind of some of those things that as adults we kind of display. But can you give our listeners a basic understanding from a neurobiological point of view then, how the brain and the body from some of our young people respond to some of these stresses that they experience in school and what that might kind of look like?
Yeah, well, I mean, lots of things activate that biological process, that stress pathway. And you're right, John, they're very different, and they're different for all of us. And what can activate the stress pathway in one person in a negative way might be positive for another. So for an example of that would be loud music. Some people just feel absolutely alive and invigorated when they listen to loud music. Other people are completely overwhelmed. And it really depends on the wiring of their nervous system. So, and actually, even contextually, it changes. So what is stressful in a school environment might not be in a home environment. What is stressful in the morning might not be stressful in the afternoon. So stress is dynamic, and understanding those components helps us to see why children are behaving in certain ways. So when the stress pathway is activated, things change in the body and the brain. And it's all really about mobilization of energy, getting energy to our cells and our muscles so that we can do one of two things, to fight or to flee, to run. So the adrenaline really makes our heart rate go up, our blood pressure goes up, our focus improves. We want to move. Cortisol is released, which is a small, slow-acting hormone. This releases glucose into our bloodstream, so we have a little bit more energy. Now, this is great if you're on the playing field, but it's not always great in the classroom because this mobilization of energy when we're expecting children to be still and sit down is a mismatch. There's a mismatch between our biology and our environment. And also when this stress pathway is activated, we also have some systems are switched off. So digestion, reproduction, and repair are switched off or reduced. So if we find ourselves in a state where we are continuously stressed or stressed too high, this is not good for the body. So a little bit of stress is good. We need it. Keep us alive, keep us motivated, activate us. But if that stress response gets switched on for too long, then we get the negative impacts and it starts showing up. It shows up in our health and it shows up in our well-being. And I think that's really critical. It shows up in the individual, but it shows up in how we relate to others. And
And
obviously the school
that's really
environment.
interesting. Yeah, it's really interesting in the classroom, isn't it? In terms of you saying that it might be good in certain aspects because you're on the playing field and it releases that adrenaline and it almost gets us ready for battle, doesn't it? In terms of, we're ready and we're primed for it. But in the middle of a comprehension exercise or that's not where we want to be. So really interesting kind of how that plays out. So for teachers then thinking, right, well, okay, I understand that it's different in every child. And actually, we understand that those type of things kind of happening below the surface. What are the signs that teachers can kind of look out for then, I suppose, on the surface that might indicate that a student is not just in, feeling stressed, but is actually struggling to regulate due to a perceived stressful situation? Because it's all right, that you've seen that those stress things are there and they're natural, but actually, at some point, there's a tipping point for some students, isn't it? And that's when they can't regulate. So, what would be your tips for kind of what we would see on the surface then?
Yeah, great. I think that word tipping point is really important. It is a little bit like, you fill a glass of water and you can hold it, hold it, hold it, and then something takes you over the edge. And again, that's linked to our window of tolerance. I think in relation to that question, I think we need to clarify something because after working in schools for many years and doing training, is that many students are self-regulating. However, their strategies that they're employing to regulate themselves might not be considered acceptable.
Interesting.
So when we're looking at low-level disruption, for example, and we're seeing, rocking on chairs, we're seeing shouting out, we're seeing walking out of the room, doodling, not starting work, just for all those low-level disruptions that we talk about. Actually, we could look at that through the lens of neurobiology and actually see that those children are actually trying really hard to regulate themselves. They just don't know the right way to do it in that situation. And it's not a choice. They're not choosing it. It's their body making them do something. So that's one kind of question to throw back to you back there. So let's say they're struggling to self-regulate, or they are struggling to self-regulate in a helpful or adaptive way. So we've got to look at the context. Is it where are they? We've also got to look at the adult in charge. What is their window of tolerance? And this is that playing into it? And then we also got to think about, is that a technique or strategy that they've used, is it harmful to them? So we look at alcohol, drugs, self-harming. So there's lots of components we can look at when looking at strategies. But I suppose if a student is struggling to self-regulate, and that means that they have too much stress and they're not able to turn down the dial in their nervous system so that they can tolerate and engage in the classroom, we might see signs, and generally signs are through behaviour. But they're also kind of, we can dig deeper into behaviour. So it could be physical signs. You see, you might see a muscle tension. You might see a child that looks really stiff, like uncooked spaghetti. Or one that's flopping onto a desk that's gone into shutdown. You might see their posture changes, more closed, more open. The pupil size is a really good indicator of stress levels. Okay, again, if you feel safe to get close enough to them, rocking, emotion, anger, outbursts, poor emotional regulation, moodiness, you know, that tone of voice they might be using, behaviour, so we might get some defiance, the argumentative, avoidance, nail biting, mental, being distracting to others, being distracted, or hyper-focus. So it shows up in different ways. And this is why we've got to become stress detectives.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting. Kind of, listeners won't be able to see me smiling, but I was kind of smiling throughout that, thinking I've probably in my 20 years teaching career, not having known some of those things, have seen that as poor behavior, defiance, all those type of things, which so many people listening will be thinking, yeah, I've seen that. And also, there's also a fine line, because what you also described there could also have been a conversation about moody teenage behavior, you know, and actually kind of it's how do we then detect that? And how do we kind of be able to identify when it's a stressful situation for that individual and when it's just disruption, distraction, and kind of attention, I suppose, you know?
And that's saying, well, something we're doing in the training is we're really going to learn how to hone in on the difference between stress behavior, which is not a choice, and misbehavior, which is a choice.
Perfect.
And there's different parts of the brain that control those two aspects. And that helps us as a teacher then filter what we're seeing in our students and then respond appropriately.
So that leads me on into it. So if we then identify as a teacher that a student is in this state and it's kind of, it's not a choice and it's from stressful kind of behavior and they're not able to kind of, you know, regulate themselves. Are there any quick and practical ways then, and I know we talk about every child and every context being different, but are there anything from your experience that staff can use quite quickly to help kind of co-regulate them? You know, the student in that question at any point?
There are some quick and practical ways. I suppose, just emphasizing there's no one size fits all approach. And okay, what works one day with one student might not work the next day. So it's also that dynamism that exists. But it's a tendency for adults, especially teachers, to use words and explanations to be kind of cognitive. And there's a brilliant neuroscientist called Daniel Huberman, and I love his work, but he says trying to change the mind using the mind is like trying to grab a fog. So what I suggest is that we lean into the body. And when we look at co-regulation and leaning to the body, first of all, that teacher has to lean into their own body. They have to self-regulate because they might be triggered by those behaviours. Their own stress level is going up, especially when they think it's a choice. So the first thing is that calm myself, reframe that behaviour. This child potentially is not choosing it. That allows you to regulate and to calm yourself. And then you can use your posture. You can use that look in your eye, the tilt of the head, the smile, the tone of your voice. And if you feel comfortable to do so, if that child feels comfortable, you can use touch. These are much more primal messaging systems, than non-verbal. And those are the first cues that the body will pick, that the other person's body will pick up, allow them to then regulate their nervous system using the vagus nerve, which we're going to go into a lot of detail in the training. And when you've regulated that vagus nerve and you've reduced the stress and you've returned closer to calm, then you can employ other strategies. For example, you might know that this child needs to move because of the stress response. So rather than telling them to do something, you might give them, you know how kids don't like to be picked out, singled out. They want to go under the radar. The most important thing for them is to fit in and to belong. So do you start honing in? Oh, I've noticed that you're feeling rather stressed. Would you like to go and do this, that, and the other? They're going to go, oh my God, I want to die and go onto the table. That's too much. But if you said, I've got this book that needs to be delivered to Mr. So-and-so, could you just drop it off to them? Thanks very much. That gives them an opportunity to move, change environment, to regulate themselves in private, and then to come back when they're ready.
Just that there is a great example, isn't it? That actually it's that really experienced teacher that does something deliberately that no one else knows happening. The student maybe doesn't even know it's happening to them. And they're thinking, oh, brilliant. I've just by chance, I've been given the opportunity to take a book and have some time out. And that's the magic, isn't it?
It's a golden ticket, but it requires that member of staff, that teaching staff, to recognize and to understand and to know, have a toolkit or a tool belt. This kid needs this. Yeah. That kid needs this. And it's very energy demanding as a teacher to do that. But it's also the most rewarding thing because we have that window that's, you know, 60, 90 seconds where we can almost reset our nervous system and we can help somebody else do it before it escalates, before it becomes overwhelming, before they get into trouble, before they get a sanction. And if we can do that, we keep them happy, we keep them learning, we keep them regulated, and gradually that's how they learn to self-regulate.
Absolutely. And I think one of the key parts there, going right back to what you said at the start of that question, was that before we even think about what we're going to say or do, we need to regulate ourselves, because, you know, there'll be lots of people listening to this who are parents as well. And, you know, when your son, your daughter, you know, gets in a mood and starts shouting, if you then, you know, mimic that kind of behavior, and before you regulate yourself, it never ends well, does it? You know, we're both shaking our heads and laughing now. Like, it never, ever, ever ends well.
And I know that especially well because my third child is on the spectrum and he has, you know, complex issues. And I have learned the hard way the difference between me regulating and choosing my response and me reacting.
And it takes, as a teacher, it takes you to be the professional. It takes you to take a deep breath. It takes you to bury your pride sometimes. All of those things. But actually, if we know what's right and right for that student, then again, think about what the science is, understand it, and respond once you've thought about it, rather than with that kind of gut reaction, open your mouth and let's go 0 to 60, and, you know.
Exactly. And it is so easy for us to say here in a podcast than do. It is a practice. And it does require both kind of the intellectual understanding, but also the practice. I still make mistakes. I've been doing this for a long time. I still mess up. And I have to be self-compassionate when I mess up and recognize that actually my threshold was high, and then make those adjustments. So there's, you know, it's a constant learning journey, whether that doesn't end somewhere forever.
Absolutely. And you said that practice, that's that real deliberate practice of, you know, it, the next time this, I am really going to try this. I think people should really think about how they're going to do that and not create a situation to practice it in, but the next time it looks like you're able to identify and that presents itself, give it a go and think about the things we talked about, which is great. Yeah. Okay. Now, ideally, and obviously we've been talking about co-regulation here as well as self-regulation, if, you know, longer term personal development, we obviously want our students to enable, you know, their own self-regulation skills. You know, we don't want to always have to keep co-regulating, because that suggests maybe that we haven't then given them the skills to be able to do it themselves. And we want to develop lifelong learners, we want to develop young adults, and we want them to do it themselves. So what can teachers do to support then the development of self-regulation over a period of time, so that students can actually identify this themselves and put things in place once they see their own triggers and can put things in place to maybe self-regulate?
So I think the biggest thing that teachers could do is really help students develop self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Practice that, this again, deliberate practice of tuning into the signals that brain and body are sending us all the time. But our modern world is so full of stimuli, phones, lights, this and that, we tend to ignore or override those signals. But if we could just integrate those self-awareness practices, checking in at the beginning of a lesson, even, you know, at the end of a, before or the end of a challenging task, or at the end of a lesson, and actually just close your eyes and just pay attention to how the sensations in your body, not what you're thinking, but what you're feeling at a more kind of visceral body level, I think there's a really good starting point. And that becomes integrated into practice. It's good for the teacher, it's good for the students. And it's that awareness that is the crucial first step in being able to then recognize what state you're in.
Yeah.
And then choose the appropriate strategy or tool or activity to move you from where you are, if necessary, to where you need to be.
Perfect. And I suppose that just comes back to the age old kind of, know your students, know them, know their signs, know their kind of, their needs, and how they are all slightly different. Because like you say, one student, the same behaviors could be being displayed from the front and the back of the class, and one could be a choice and one is not a choice. And that's the skill, isn't it? That's what we're saying there.
I think there's nothing, I mean, apart from being a parent, I think there's nothing more challenging as a job, as being a teacher. There's nothing more rewarding, but that ability to look at, regulate yourself and co-regulate simultaneously 30 other people in the classroom. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
There's not many places that have to do that with of people who find it hard to self-regulate because they're young. But, modelling self-regulation is really important. I mean, I will sometimes just close my eyes in front of my children, or I'll do a deep breath and they go, "Why are you breathing like that?" So I'm just calming myself down because something you just said upset me. I'm just really open about it. I may roll my shoulders. Again, when our shoulders are up by our ears, we're telling our body we're in fight and flight. Put music on. There's all these ways that we can model self-regulation. And when we do that, it drip feeds into the students. Ah, that felt good to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to try that. So we don't need to be cognitive about it. We can be really subtle. Because, teenagers, especially secondary school students, they don't like adults telling them what to do. But they do pick up. They pick up on what we do.
Absolutely. And the more we do that, and the more all of our teachers do that, the more they're seeing that regularly. And they're seeing that as a, we're doing this as an educated adult. So actually, it must be pretty good to do it. So yeah, it's a great way to model that. So brilliant. Right. Coming to my last question then now, and rounding this off quite nicely, a little kind of potential soapbox moment, if you want, or a little kind of lasting impression. So if there's one lasting message that you'd like to leave our listeners with about either stress, co-regulation or self-regulation, what would it be?
So I think it goes back to the previous question. It all starts with awareness. So when you are able to notice what state you're in, you have the power to change it. So there's a few tools that I use regularly with awareness. One of my ones is just to close my eyes and to take a few deep breaths in through my nose and out through my nose, nice, long and slow. This actually activates the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve communicates with our heart, it communicates with our face, and it changes our physiological state within 30 to 60 seconds. It's a really quick change. Now, if we don't want to use that physical tool, there's also a mental tool we can use. So that is just bringing into your mind's eye a person or a thing, be a view of nature that you are grateful for. So when we do that and we actually visualize it and we allow ourselves to kind of almost absorb the neurochemistry that comes from that gratitude, we actually change, we turn off the stress response. We turn down the dial. There's a great neurobiologist, molecular biologist called Bruce Lipton, and he says, you can't be in gratitude and in fight and flight at the same time. So when we practice gratitude, we switch off that stress response and it immediately changes our neurochemistry in the same way a breath does. Combine the two and you get a double. But those are just really ones that you can do anywhere by yourself before you speak to a student. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to look different. It's very subtle. But it has both those things have an amazing impact on regulating the nervous system, so that's self-regulation, and your ability to then co-regulate the people around you.
Fantastic. And I'm hopefully, as a parent myself, hopefully people listening, if they are parents as well as teachers, they'll find some kind of golden nuggets there, either at home, but also in the classroom or the corridors or on the playground, wherever they are in contact with young people, because there's been some great, what I found really interesting is that there's been the understanding and the science there, but also packed with lots of golden nuggets throughout that, drip fed throughout that interview. So I really appreciate that. So thank you for a really interesting discussion today, Andrea. And like I said before, if our listeners have been in, you know, either as a parent or a teacher, have been as interested as I have, then I'm here to tell them, and you mentioned it a couple of times, that you're about to do a training course for us at Richmond School up here in North Yorkshire. It's on the 14th of October, and all the details on how to book can be found on our training website, yes@aretelearningtrust.net. And that's yes, Y-E-S, at A-T, Arete, A-R-E-T-E, learningtrust.net. And then if you click on the training events tab, you will be able to find all the information there to speak to Andrea and really learn from her pearls of wisdom. So it's been a fantastic, interesting 20 or 30 minutes for me as a parent, as well as a teacher and a leader. So thank you so much for spending that time with me today.
You're welcome, John. Thank you for inviting me again. And I look forward to seeing everybody on the 14th.
Thanks for listening to the ALT Learn podcast. We'll be back soon with another episode where we'll be speaking to more of our teachers and finding out how they're turning theory into practice. Until then, take care.